Good afternoon and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Today we have an inspiring local story with broad influence, well beyond Alaska. This is the story of a startup company here in Anchorage by three local women with a vision. Their goal is to solve a persistent problem widespread in the population. Edema, or the swelling of a limb, can be the result of many medical conditions that people have to manage, from cancer surgery to diabetes to arthritis to even pregnancy. One of the company's founders lives with just such a problem from a surgery she had as a teenager. Because of the removal of some lymph nodes, one of her legs swells from lymphedema. The result? Her shoes don't always fit. Therein lies the seed for this startup. She didn't want to buy shoes two sizes too big. She didn't want to buy two pairs of the same shoe style, one for each foot. And she didn't want to be forced to buy ugly shoes. So what did she do? That's the story we'll tell on the show today. There are medical dimensions to this tale, mostly in explaining how and why edema happens. There are creative dimensions, coming up with a fresh and attractive solution to a persistent problem. And of course, there are business aspects. This was a startup by three people with no previous business experience. In that regard, it offers a pathway to listeners out there in similar circumstances. Maybe you have a good idea to solve a problem you see going unanswered. How do you make that happen? We have guests who can enlighten us on all three aspects. We have two of the company founders, Laura Oden. Welcome, Laura.
Hello.
Happy to have you.
Thank you.
We have Celia Crossett.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Another co-founder. And we have three founders. There is Ayla. What's Ayla's last name?
Ayla Rogers.
She's not here with us today, but you guys are a threesome team.
We are.
Yeah. And we also have Isaac Vanderberg, an experienced startup mentor and the managing director of Launch Alaska. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Happy to have you here. And finally, on the latter part of our show, we will be joined by phone with an occupational therapist, Rita Lowe, who advised these startup founders on many of the universal aspects of their idea, how a shoe can best accommodate edema in the feet, and who are the many audiences that could benefit from an attractive shoe that can expand to fit changing feet sizes. So let's get started. Before we do, I'd like to share our phone numbers. Your questions, your comments are welcome. And since this seems to be a widespread problem, I think we may hear from a lot of people today asking us about it or telling us about their experience. You can give us a call here in Anchorage at 550-8433. We do have a statewide number, 1-888-353-5752. And we can also take your email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. And finally, we do have some links on alaskapublic.org under the Hometown webpage. So you'll hear us talking about the name of the company. It's Pandair Shoes. They have a large social media presence, which has been significant in their development. We've got links to those on the site. So I think, you know, if you're driving along, don't worry about trying to scratch down an email address. Just remember alaskapublic.org and go to the Hometown Alaska webpage and you'll have it. Okay. So Laura, let's start with you and Celia. You are the founders. And I just sort of want to help people understand, where did Pandair Shoes come from? Go ahead and just start. Where did the seed of the idea come from, Laura?
Well, I think where it started from was my own experience of having so much difficulty with shoes over decades, because I've really had this condition, since I was about 16 or 17. And going into shoe stores is really a nightmare because you just can't find what works, and uncomfortable shoes can really, affect your whole quality of life. And I didn't realize how many people were experiencing this problem until I decided to try to do something about it.
What did you rely on? I mean, here you were 16 or 17 when you had surgery and you were confronted with having one foot that didn't always match the other?
Well, lymphedema and edema in general is a chronic condition that worsens over time. So at 16, the problem was different than at, 35.
Ah, I got it. I was just wondering, teenage time is such a difficult time, right? And I did see, I think I saw on some of your websites that I was looking at, parents with children that were worried about the, So I guess I just think there's not just a medical need and a comfort need, but there's also, a feel-good need, especially for young people to have some options, as well as older people, of course. So I'm just thinking, are you trying to design things that work for any particular age group or a broad age group?
Well, I think we're trying to meet a lot of needs. We think of this as a bell curve of people who fall into this bucket. And, you know, people on this side of the bell curve don't have as much of a problem, and people on the other side of the bell curve have a big problem, and they really might be able to not wear shoes at all or just slippers. So it's a huge number of needs that we're trying to meet, and it's not needs that have been really well addressed in the marketplace. So we're kind of trying to do a lot, and it's going to take a little bit of time for us to meet all of the needs, but hopefully we'll get there. Yeah, we want to have things look attractive so that people, you know, feel good.
Yeah.
It's really about finding something that normalizes you. A lot of the parents we have feel like their children that have, or their teenagers or their young adults that have two different sized feet, it feels very like a thing to be singled out for. And I think for a lot of the folks that are, you know, reaching out to us saying, I hope you can develop kids' shoes, I hope you can develop shoes for young adults, it's really about finding something that can fit in and that makes you able to sort of be part of your normal social group, and it's not something that you can be singled out for anymore.
And as an older adult, you just want to feel like you look good, whatever situation you're in. Now, are you only focusing on shoes for females, or is it because, Laura, that's where you generated the idea from, or what are you thinking about shoes for males?
So we know that the need is out there for men, women, children, women. We know that there's a wide range of needs. We started with women because the options for women are a little more limited than men. For instance, if you're a person that has a professional job, you can't really get away with like a black tennis shoe
Or
bedroom slippers, where, you know, men can't really get away with that either, but there's a little bit more range of acceptability in men's shoes. So we started with women's shoes because we knew that's where the biggest need was. But we've, you know, every time we post something, there's usually one or two people that are like, when are you going to do men's shoes? When are the kids' shoes going to be here?
Right.
So we know that the need is beyond what we're able to do today.
Yeah. Now, the name of the company is Pandair Shoes, so tell me what the word Pandair means. And either Celia or Laura, jump in.
Pandair is a Latin word. It means to stretch, expand, unfold.
And why does that fit your shoes?
Well, because our shoes are really designed to accommodate whatever size feet you are. And one thing that I would just clarify, when we're talking about two different size feet, you know, almost everybody has two different size feet. That's very common. It's usually within about a half a size. The different size feet that we're trying to address isn't so much length, and it's not so much width. It has to do with volume, and that's what is a problem when it comes to lymphedema or edema or circulation issues, or even sometimes those structural issues that are related to other types of problems like arthritis or you know, even bunions.
Right, a misshapen foot a bone that is really. Tell me what's different about your shoes. I gather there are orthopedic shoes that try to deal with this. Tell me about orthopedic shoes, Laura, because you've probably dealt with them.
Well, I think our experience is that orthopedic shoes are just sort of across the board not as attractive as what people want to wear. They want the comfort and they want the fit, but they just don't want to wear things that look like orthopedic shoes. So that was a big challenge that we were trying to accomplish, was to come up with something that's orthopedic but doesn't look orthopedic. And you know, we think that these shoes that we made, they look very normal. In fact, that's been one of the issues that we've had a lot of comments online.
They look like regular shoes.
They don't look like they will solve the problem. And then we put them on someone's feet, and it's kind of an astonishing moment.
Well, did orthopedic shoes expand, or do they just try to fit your foot? I mean, what's the difference between building a shoe that is expandable, like you are doing, versus what orthopedic shoemakers were trying to do?
So traditionally, you go into a shoe store and they put your foot in a Brannock device, which is the thing that measures the length of your foot and the width of your foot. And that's how they determine your shoe size, is the measurement of the length of your foot and the width of your foot gives you an approximation of your size. The thing that makes our shoes different is that we've designed a shoe that is designed to expand where people who have swelling, where your feet would normally swell. So the shoes are designed so that right over the toes, which is where people tend to get a little bit of swelling, is made to go sort of up and down, up over the volume of the foot. And the same with the midfoot. Most shoes have a little bit of constriction. If you'll notice, like, the tops of your laces tend not to go around the sides of their foot. They're really sort of on really the top. On the top. And then ankles. Most people have ankle swelling at some point in their life. I was on an airplane recently, so I had ankle swelling. And our shoes are designed to be able to accommodate sort of around the back of the ankle, that particular area of swelling. So that's what makes us different from a traditional shoe company, is we're expanding in three places that shoes tend not to expand.
Right. And what is the material that can expand? Is it just like a heavy-duty elastic that it's tight when it's not needed and loosens as it's needed?
We've used a lot of stretchy materials, and we certainly have experimented with a lot of them. But the main thing that we're using in our current designs is neoprene. And what we didn't anticipate was how much people would really like it once they put the neoprene, especially people with large swelling, especially around the ankle. We have one shoe that's really designed for that. And it's very comfortable because the swelling tends to be uncomfortable. So it compresses in a way that is has a positive result.
So the neoprene is actually helpful in some ways.
It feels
in that
good.
Way. It feels good next to the skin. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Laura, I still, you know, I think that the audience for this show could be people who have always had an idea out there like you did. You know, this could be better. I don't see anybody in the marketplace or anywhere trying to solve this problem. So I kind of want to go back to you sitting there wanting to do this. And, you know, where did you get the courage? What was the first step? I mean, how did you get started?
Well, there was a couple of moments. I mean, the first moment, I think, is when it hit me that nobody was addressing the shoe problem. And then I started to investigate that and see if anybody was doing it. It really didn't seem like they were. And I started reaching out to some people in New York, and I was trying to find a designer. I was trying to find things that I had no connection with. And then what happened was in January of 2016, there was this event in Anchorage, which happens every year. And anyone who's interested in startups or entrepreneurship should really seriously consider doing this. It's called Startup Week.
And how do you learn about it? Is it just on the web? Do you have to be tied into some
listserv? I have a feeling Isaac can tell us.
Yeah, yes, Isaac is in the room with us.
There's several different ways to find it, but I would recommend folks going to startupdigest.com to have access not just to that event, but to events throughout the year. There are quite a few ways to kind of tap into the local entrepreneurial ecosystem now, but startupdigest.com is a great one. AK Startups, it's run by the folks over at BE, the Business Enterprise Institute at the university, is another good one. Also, if you come to the boardroom any Wednesday at 9 a.m., although we're taking a break for the summer, but there's a great community of folks at 1 Million Cups where you can also have access to upcoming events and other people that are, you know, launching startups.
Right. It's something of an ecosystem, I guess.
It is an ecosystem, truly.
My first exposure was at UAA, knowing in the spring they had a business competition, I think.
Yeah, the business plan competition.
Yes, a business plan competition. And that was really the first thing that I saw. And just it was just fun to see what people were coming up with. I don't know how far along they had to get, but their business plan was being judged. And maybe there was even some financial incentive, right? If you were the first one, you might get a little funding, get going.
Yeah, and maybe Laura and Celia can talk a little bit more about some of their experiences going through these competitions. But there is, for folks that have a problem that they're trying to solve and an idea to solve it, there are actually quite a few opportunities to generate a little bit of, you know, seed money or prize money to
get you down the road a little bit.
Get your start. And I don't know if Laura, if you want to talk about some of your experiences.
Well, I think there's a couple of levels. I mean, we find our experience is that the entrepreneurship community in Anchorage is very robust.
Why is that? That's exciting to hear, actually. I mean, why do you think that is?
I mean, I don't know why it is. It's just that we've found ways to connect, and you know, it's just there's a lot of energy there, and when you have this energy, people gravitate toward it.
I'm just going to throw our numbers out. I just try to not let too much time go by in case people are thinking, give me the number, I have a question. 550-8433 in Anchorage, and you can email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. Our topic is a new startup company right here in Anchorage. Three local women started with an idea, and they have moved on down the road. And I thought it would be fun to have them on the show because there might be other people in Anchorage and in Alaska who are in a similar situation. There was a problem they thought should be solved. They had an idea on how to solve it, but then what's the next step? And so you have moved down that road a little bit, and you can offer a little bit of insight and, you know, shine the flashlight down that road a little bit for people. So we were just going to talk about, you know, sort of in the early stages, you know, I guess getting feedback, going to meeting places where people are sharing ideas. I think 1 Million Cups is one I have heard about that is in the boardroom, and sometimes I've seen it at the museum on certain days, where people just stand up and kind of give a pitch. That's a good way to get some feedback.
Well, yeah, 1 Million Cups happens every Wednesday, and that was my first entree into this whole entrepreneurship community. And then from there, Celia and I decided to go to the Startup Weekend, which is sort of a marathon business planning weekend. It's super nerdy and fun.
When does it happen? Once a year?
Which event?
Startup Weekend.
It's moved.
It depends. Yeah, it depends on the year. And there are several startup weekends throughout the state now. So I think there's one or two now in Anchorage a year. But I think there are more. There's one in Fairbanks. They're doing one in Juneau now.
Okay.
So there are several different places in the state.
You know, Isaac, give out those. I'll get them added to our webpage. But give out again if you want. If you're listening and you're like, wow, I need to tune into this audience, you were saying, how can people kind of start to read and learn what the events are?
Yeah, so Startup Digest is one. So if you go to startupdigest.com, that's
just Google that.
Or Alaska Startups, akstartups.com, is another one. Again, the boardroom is the co-working space, Alaska's first co-working space in downtown Anchorage. And if you want to just show up and meet some great people.
Even if you're not ready to pitch your idea yet.
That's what I did.
It's a great way to just see what other folks are doing before you're ready to
stand up in the fire.
Yeah.
Firing zone.
It's an inspirational place.
That's what's so valuable about something like Startup Weekend. So the format of a Startup Weekend is very interesting. You come in on a Friday night and you either pitch your idea for your company. It has to be a new idea. It has to be something that, you know, doesn't exist or that you're not currently already working on. Or if you're someone like me who's maybe hadn't quite had their own ideas developed, you can sort of stand up and say, well, you know, I'm Celia. I have a little bit of a background in finance. I can work with spreadsheets. I'm really interested in startups in general. And you kind of get paired on a team. And sort of the only rule is, one, you have to stand up and say something. And the second kind of rule is that you're not allowed to be a team of one person. And so that was how we got started was – Laura was looking for other people to join and kind of found me and found Ayla and said, I need your help because otherwise I can't get started on this project if I don't have anybody to help me.
Yeah.
But it's a great format that if you're not an entrepreneur but want to sort of see what that ecosystem is like, you don't have to come with, you know, the next Uber or the next Facebook of an idea. You can just come and say, I'm interested in doing fun things.
I think it's a very forgiving community, forgiving audience. So you don't have to pitch. You can listen. I remember the first time I went to one of the 1 Million Cups. I don't think I listened at all because on the first sentence, I was so inspired that I did nothing but scribble ideas.
So it was fertile ground for you. I mean, what you were hearing was making a lot of sense and firing you to move forward.
And I think you pitch when you're ready. You pitch when you have a team. You pitch when you want to get some feedback. And the landscape is very receptive to raw and early ideas.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's fascinating. I guess I just want to ask you, this is not about your company, but what kinds of things have you heard pitched? Can you just, without maybe attaching them to the idea, but I mean, it sounds like a very fertile area and you might have listened to things that were really, you'd never thought about before at one of these startup weekends or...
Well, I think one thing that I noticed after about a year or year and a half of going is I sort of reflected back on how many pitches were actually manufacturing ideas. And after about the sixth or eighth one, I realized people are thinking about manufacturing up here. Sometimes they're thinking about it like we are, which means we're not necessarily making shoes here. But other people are making stuff here, and that's a part of our economy that is developable.
Which needs to be developed, right? We need alternatives. Yeah. Well, we're going to take a tiny break here. You're listening to Hometown Alaska. We'll be right back to continue discussing Pandair Shoes and how a startup gets traction. So I'm Kathleen McCoy, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. And if you're just joining us, we're talking about Pandair Shoes, which is an Anchorage startup by three women who saw a problem and decided that they were going to do something about it. And now they have a company that is actually producing shoes that solve a problem for people whose feet swell. And there's a lot of people who have this experience. It can be an accident, it can be pregnancy, it can be diabetes, it can be arthritis, it can be lymphedema. And you know, Laura, who's here with us today, Laura Oden is one of the founders. Celia Crossett is another founder. And we also have Isaac Vanderberg with us, who is in the startup community here in Anchorage and a managing director for Launch Alaska, which starts a lot of young companies up. But Laura, you had that experience and that led you to really focus on trying to solve a problem in a way that satisfied you. In other words, an aesthetically pleasing, as I think I saw it on your website, cute shoes that are fun to wear. So I think I want to switch over here to Isaac just a little bit, because he's not in the company. He has a little bit of distance. He's seen many startups. And I kind of want, in the interest of our audience who are perhaps future entrepreneurs, you know, help us understand Pandair Shoes and how they are fitting the cycles that a startup goes through.
Sure. Yeah. You know, I think when people hear the word startup, they think of
garages.
A garage, right? First, get a garage. and then, you know, you work on some piece of software for, you know, a short period of time. And then all of a sudden, you know, customers and investors just come flocking in.
Silicon Valley calls.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's this idea that folks have. I think the reality, which Laura and Celia can probably speak to, you know, more in depth is, you know, oftentimes you have an idea for if not just years, decades that you ruminate on. You identify some problem. You know,
and sometimes it doesn't go away. The itch doesn't go away. Yeah.
You know, I think they, one of the great things about Pandair is that they did so clearly articulate that problem. You know, you asked earlier, so what is the problem? And she was able to articulate that within
quickly
a single sentence. And that's actually a tremendously difficult thing for companies to do. And so, you know, oftentimes a startup will spend a long time just trying to figure out what the problem is that we're trying to solve. If you can get that, you know, that's actually one of the biggest hurdles to mm-hmm. overcome. And then, you know, it's not a linear process after that. You know, there are many starts and stops. You go in different directions. There is not just one valley of death. There are many valleys of death. You know, oftentimes I think there's a lot of soul searching and late nights, and we all, you know, have to thank our families and friends to bear with us because it's a huge time commitment. You know, and it's truly a labor of love. I think another kind of hallmark that I think is a really neat thing that Pandair has done is that it's something that they care about deeply, and it's an important problem that will carry them through those hard times and give them the staying power to kind of stick with it.
Right.
Yeah. And I think that's important is solving a problem that you really care about, because you're gonna have to care about it to make it through.
Yeah. You know, I remember having another entrepreneur on a couple years ago. I know her name was Heather, and it was about backcountry food, and one of the things she talked about was being able to scale. Like, she was doing everything herself, and you know, they just said you're going to run out of gas if you don't find a way to have partners. And is that another piece of this?
Yeah, again, so Heather Kelly with Heather's
That's
Choice.
Right. Heather Kelly.
Yeah, and she's again one of the very talented local entrepreneurs. And I do think you put your finger on one distinction between, let's say, a startup and a small business is that element of scalability. Is having a product that is going to go, or has the potential or the aspiration to go after really large markets and really scale. that's a bit of a differentiator with the small business, which can be, they are, you know, pillars of our local economy and very important in the local economy. But oftentimes, they're not thinking of going after global markets. They're thinking of delivering a product here locally for a, you know, somewhat limited market. Different business model, different animal altogether. The startup is really something that is looking to scale and then going after really big problems.
Ah, so that's why this one is, I mean, there's people all over the world with edema and lymphedema and diabetes. So that's kind of daunting,
We think our market is about 45 million in the U.S. and a couple hundred million worldwide.
Wow. That makes it clear that social media and the internet is a really important piece of getting your information out there. You know, you're doing it all yourselves. That's amazing. I'm going to throw our phone numbers out just in case there's other entrepreneurs out there that want to ask Isaac a question or want to, you know, tell their story a little bit. We're at 550-8433 in Anchorage, or we welcome an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. Let me think. I kind of wanted to get at, and Isaac, you might have something to say about this. You have three partners. That could be a blessing and it could be a curse, right? I don't know, if you don't see eye to eye all the time, that sort of thing. I'm just trying to wonder, maybe Laura, you began and you knew you needed partners. In fact, at the startup weekend, you couldn't be alone, right? You needed to have people pitch with you.
Well, I think there's sort of a general idea that partnerships are good and alone is not as good.
Because you might run out of gas.
I mean, not that alone is bad, but if you really want to make something that's scalable and kind of go after a global market, you're going to need more than one person. And we've talked about this a ton, and you might just want to pick this up, but we think that we have sort of the magic triangle of being able to highly productive conversation going because there's three of us. They're always pushing.
So the three of us never agree on anything.
This is good to talk about.
We very rarely agree.
What do you mean we don't agree?
We very rarely agree on a lot of things in the company. And it's actually great because usually it'll be on a spectrum. I'll be on one side, you know, I really don't want to go down that road. I don't want to talk to that person. One of us will be kind of in the middle with, you know, I kind of see like there might be value. I'm not totally sure. And then one of us is usually on the other side of, this is the most important thing that we have to do today or this week. Uh-huh. And the nice thing about attention like that is it allows you to sort of have other perspectives that you wouldn't, you know, that gets you out of your comfort zone and have other perspectives that you normally wouldn't employ. And that's really valuable in a company because it means, oh yeah, actually you're right. That is something that we do want to ask that person about, or we do really want to take that phone call with somebody, or we really should reach out to so-and-so about this aspect of the business. Yeah. And the nice thing is it keeps you out of your own head in a way that is a little more difficult if you're a solo entrepreneur. So instead of, oh man, I really don't want to do that, and in just being really in your emotional side of your brain, having business partners really gives you a lot of strength because it means that they're the ones kind of pulling you out and saying, no, there's really value over here, and the three of us can sort of work it out together.
Hmm. So do you have different responsibilities? Have you split up the duties, or do you share everything, or how does it work?
You know, I would just speak to that every business is different. And I think one of the things that we found is that divvying up duties, although we do that, there's a very organic process that seems to happen between the three of us, and it has a lot less to do with divvying up duties, and it has more to do with probably the fact that we're women, and we all have a very high level of communication with each other. And so as far as problem solving goes and direction and getting on the same page, we're able to do that really, really well. And we tend to do that together.
I'm going to come back to you and talk a little bit more about that. But Isaac, I've got a question from a listener who I think you can probably answer this best. This listener wants to know, how does a new startup protect their ideas as they're coming up with them in these workshops? Is there any tension there with someone stealing an idea?
So I would take that from a different angle, which is, you know, I think that's a very common concern early on. Mm-hmm. I actually think that The thing that matters is your ability to execute and to run a company. There are so many ideas out there and so many people that have great ideas that the thing that really matters is, can you find co-founders the way that Laura and Celia have been able to do? Can you clearly articulate your problem? Are you a competent team that can actually, you know, meet deadlines and stay focused? So there's a whole industry around, you know, IP and patent lawyers, and that's a thing that in certain situations makes a lot of sense. But I feel oftentimes the concern is a little bit misplaced. Like, focus more on just executing. Share your idea with anyone that will listen. Get a lot of feedback. Have them tell you why your idea might not be the greatest idea, and actually listen and then iterate on your idea. Do a lot of that work, and then at some point down the road, if you have some really special sauce that needs to have some patent protection around it, then you can go in and protect that.
Sounds like people early on worry about something that's premature for them to worry about, you think?
I think that's one of the early things. Another one that we often see is folks that before they have even made the jump into a startup, say, you know, I have a non-disclosure agreement. Will you sign this? And my response is always, you know, no. Like, if it's that special and it's that protected, we actually don't want to see it at this point. Go out, develop this,
get more feedback,
iterate, because I think a technology, as soon as a technology hits the streets, it's basically outdated. Uh-huh. Customers will have new requirements for it. You will iterate on that product, and so it's not the tech that matters. It's the people and their ability to innovate and constantly, you know, meet changing customer demands and understand what those demands are and yeah. forecast where the markets are going. That's what matters. Yeah. And oftentimes, you know, too much focus is placed on the tech or the intellectual property, as mm-hmm. they call it, and not enough on just execution and on the team.
Yeah. Something that struck me looking at the various ways that I could read about you, whether it was on your Facebook page or your Pandere Shoe page or listening to interviews that you've given or newspaper articles that you've already commented and been in, was just this idea of, and it just flew out of my head, whatever I was going to say. It was, it was the idea that before you even had a product, you had people talking to you about it. So you almost had an ongoing focus group. And I thought of it, Isaac, because you were talking about getting feedback. I'd like for Celia and Laura to talk a little bit about how you knew to do that. Did that just happen naturally? You threw up a Facebook page and suddenly people are talking to you? Or how did it happen? How did you get that community that was didn't even have a shoe to look at, but was already telling you what they wanted?
Well, I think one of the mistakes a lot of entrepreneurs make is they think that the idea that they have is a good one and the right one, and it may be. But if you haven't brought it out to other people and tested it in the marketplace, it doesn't mean anything, because ideas are actually really easy.
Ideas are easy. Yeah.
So what we knew we needed to do, and I think this was our number one thing that made us successful early on, is that we knew that we had to find a group of people to bounce the idea off of and get feedback from and find out, validate the idea.
Did you pick that up from Startup Weekend, or did you just have a gut instinct about that?
Probably a combo of both, mm-hmm. maybe.
Mm-hmm. One of the things in Startup Weekend is occasionally some of the like gurus or the guides that are there at Startup Weekend to help you, they'll do is they'll come over and make a suggestion to you. And they came over to us and they said, okay, well, we think this is an interesting idea. Clearly, you guys think it is too. We need you to go out and test it. And they said there's a couple ways you could do that. And they said, well, you could go out on the street and just like ask people, which didn't seem fun.
On the street interviews.
Right. Yeah. Just, you know, can I look at your feet and do you have foot swelling problems? And let me ask total strangers down at the Fifth Avenue Mall. And yeah. sort of that didn't really appeal to us. But we thought about sort of the online communities that we have. And Laura knew that there was an online community of people that had lower limb swelling. And so we sort of said, why don't we try something digitally and see if we can get feedback that way.
I think we got 100 responses within 24 hours. So that
really?
Was one thing that was different about our group, is that nobody else really had a way to get that kind of feedback like in that startup group setting.
And I would just say that, you know, all of the events that we talk about in the community, like the startup weekends or the startup week, or, you know, these things called hackathons where we get a bunch of coders together to work on some problem, or some of the sprints that are being done now, you know, Otis and Volt 49, all of those, like the common DNA to all those events is that there's some problem that then gets tested against real users, and then you iterate on a solution. And it's that, I mean, that really is the heart of all of this. And I would say, it'd be interesting to hear from Celia, but you know, there's never been an easier time to get feedback very quickly through things like social media. There are just tools available now where you can get a massive amount of feedback in a you know, pretty low cost or almost, you know, almost free manner. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I don't know if you've used social media in that way.
Yeah, we've used social media in that way. We've used a couple other digital tools to gather feedback. I think for us, the getting to ask the right people the right questions has been really important. So I don't have a swelling condition, so I'm not necessarily in our test market. But being able to find people that do have a lower limb swelling and sort of hear their stories and hear the problems they have was really how we came up with the idea of a shoe that expands in three places. We knew there was a problem. We didn't really know what the problem was. So we spent a really long time asking, okay, where should a shoe expand? Can you solve the problem just by having a really, really wide shoe? And we found that that's not really what the problem was. You know, feet don't tend to get wider when they get swollen. They tend to swell up and over. So we spent a lot of time soliciting feedback through social media, emailing people, going to events in public and like taking pictures of feet, scrolling through people's Instagram feeds and just looking at their pictures in order to be able to really identify what the problem was.
And I would also just point out that that's not something that stops at any point. I mean, at Launch Alaska, we're very much focused on companies that have maybe are a little bit further along and have been around for several years and maybe are a little bit more mature. And they're, you know, kind of just by virtue of how long they've been around. But still, what we're working on them working on with them is that process, you know, going out and bumping into potential customers, having interviews, structuring the interviews correctly, you know, gathering that feedback, iterating again. And, you know, I think no matter if you're just starting out with an idea and you have that problem, or you've been around and you already have investors and you have revenue and you're growing, that kind of cycle of listening and iterating just never stops. And it's, you know.
I'm wondering if, Celia or Laura, you can tell me a little story of an interaction you had with your audience that was like, being a light bulb went on, you know, somebody said it in a way or said something that was a take home for you. That is there, I mean, there might've been a ton of them. I don't know, but yeah. So what?
I think for me, there's sort of two stories that come to mind. I think the one that, that feels like the moment that I knew that this was like a real problem that we were the ones that we were going to be the ones to solve was there's a woman who's on one of our Facebook groups, and she said, you know, I went to my daughter's wedding. I have one leg that swells and one leg that doesn't, and I didn't have shoes. So her solution was to buy a pair of like leopard print flats, and she put the leopard print shoe on her non-swollen foot, and over her medical foot shoe, she put leopard print duct tape so that the shoes would match, quote unquote.
Oh, wow.
And so I think something like that was really a light bulb moment for me in recognizing that not only is there nothing that actually fits on your feet, that's just, you know, you can actually just get on your feet, but there's not even anything that remotely gets close to being able to be attractive. And who wants to spend the day of their daughter's wedding with people staring at their feet?
Yeah, and duct taping.
And so that was the moment that I think that I really recognized.
That does illustrate the power of going to your audience and listening to them and hearing their stories. And I guess it would also fuel you. I mean, it fueled you, Celia.
Absolutely.
Why would anybody want to go through that? We've got to do something to solve that problem.
Right.
So, yeah.
I think we heard, because we set up a forum to listen to people that hadn't been listened to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that's something indicative of this particular group is they feel marginalized and they feel like nobody's listening and nobody's helping them. And just the fact that we had a place that people could talk and share their stories.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we heard many, many heartbreaking stories. And, you know, many of these people just are hoping for nothing. They just want to be able to feel better. That's
mm-hmm.
all.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I guess I think the fact that one of the founders, Laura, also walks that path, too, is a powerful motivator for you.
I think it offered a place for deep connection and a lot of empathy. I mean, I think I appreciate it's a very big range of problem. And my problem isn't as bad as a lot of people. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, in Alaska, I think it's somewhat under identified. And, you know, the climate is not conducive to wearing sandals all winter.
Right. Well, we're going to take a tiny break, but it just struck me that here we are talking about shoes. We're on the radio, and maybe we should come back and at least do a little description. I did post something on our website that at least shows the designs, but maybe when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about what they look like, at least the best that we can on the radio. So I'm Kathleen McCoy, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. We have been exploring a new startup here in Anchorage called Pandair Shoes. And I did say I've got two of the co-founders. There are three founders. There are three women from Alaska who saw a problem that they wanted to solve. And they brought different things to the table, different skills. And they're at the point where they are ready to manufacture shoes. And you know, we also, in this segment, want to invite Rita Lowe on the air to talk with us. She's an occupational therapist who works with lots of patients who have this condition, and she's worked with them for 20 years. Are you there, Rita?
Yes, I'm here.
Welcome to Hometown Alaska, and thank you for calling. She's calling from Atlanta, so we really appreciate it. It's probably dinner time for you there, but we really appreciate having you on. So I thought it would be valuable to have an occupational therapist who really works medically with this problem to perhaps talk about the benefit of the shoe that this company is designing. Or, you know, Rita, if there's another way that you want to answer that question, please do. But I was struck by the longevity of your work with this population.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I just thought it might be helpful for people to get a bigger picture of how much this impacts so many people. Just rough estimates in the United States alone, between 1 and 2 million people have what is referred to as primary lymphedema, which is something you could potentially be born with because it has a genetic predisposition. About 2 to 3 other million people are experiencing or will experience lymphedema, which is referred to as secondary lymphedema, which could possibly happen after having different types of cancer surgeries in the lower extremity. That could be anything from gynecological cancer, prostate, colon, even a skin melanoma in the lower body could lead to developing lymphedema at some point. What happens is that when you have a cancer surgery, they would potentially be removing lymph nodes for testing. You may have radiation as a result. You can develop scar tissue. And all of those things in combination put you at risk for developing lymphedema. It can happen early. It can happen later. No one knows who will get it for sure. And it can be years after the fact that it could show up or more spontaneously. A bunch of other folks have it or will develop it because of obesity, or another huge, large population who have vascular problems, people who have a very sedentary lifestyle and don't walk, or who just spend the vast majority of their day either standing in one place or sitting in one place and not moving enough, or it could happen due to a trauma. So there's many, many different populations that this can affect.
In your experience, is footwear one of the issues that people struggle with a lot?
it's a terrible problem. Actually, for most of my patients, when I have them fill out a what we call a life functional scale to determine how much of an impact this is having on their daily life, fit of clothing, fit of shoes is huge. And they are suffering as a result, because not only does that impact what they can find, how can they access it, but it leads to a very reduced self-image. They're depressed. They have very often, you know, this isn't a lot of the treatment, not so much the hands-on treatment that a therapist would do, but in terms of the compression garments they need and other materials for wrapping and for maintaining their, let's say, swelling reduction once they do start therapy. But that's not covered by their insurance very often. So there's a big financial piece that they just don't have the money to go out shopping.
Mm-hmm. Rita, how did you learn about Pandair shoes? How did you get into their universe or whatever? Did they reach out to you, or did you stumble on them? And because you have a lot of interest in this area.
Well, I did see them on Facebook, and of course it caught my eye, because anything having to do with lymphedema is something, you know, it's for the team. You know, we're all, anybody who works in this field feels very connected to the rest of the community. And one of my close lymphedema colleagues had mentioned to me about what Laura was doing, and she encouraged me to go further and to actually reach out to Laura. And that's when I found out about this this radio show that she was going to be participating in. And I said I'd be more than happy to bring my part of it into the discussion.
Right. And at the start of the show, you weren't on the line with us, but I had suggested that you had advised this team, but actually that's not really the case. Is that right? You've just kind of reached out and offered support based on your experience with the clientele that they're trying to serve.
Well, I think we originally connected because of this Facebook group that we had started. So it's kind of one of our go-to places when we need to get information or find other connections. And I think I had posted something in there that we were looking for, you know, somebody who had a certain kind of experience, and one thing led to another. And that's how Rita and I connected.
Have you ever met?
Just
talked on the phone.
See, this is amazing. This is amazing. Mm-hmm. I was going to introduce you, Rita, I was remarking that it's kind of strange to have a radio show about a shoe that you can't see. And I did say to Laura and Celia if they could do a little bit of describing, paint a picture for our listeners of what this shoe looks like.
I'm going to let Celia do that.
Oh, my gosh. What a big responsibility. So there's two styles. The one that we've been calling the Barista, which is called the Barista on our website, it looks a little bit like a sneaker. And this is one of the first shoes that we've really been able to develop fully beyond.
It doesn't look like a sneaker.
It looks, you know, closer to a sneaker
that
than
works for me
the
as
other
as
shoes that we have.
It's casual. It's a flat.
Right.
It has laces.
Cute. Right. It's flat and has laces, and you know, it doesn't have a heel. So that's.
But before you go off of that one, just tell me what are the flexible parts of it in a way that you think the audience might be able to picture.
So the thing that our shoe does that other shoes don't is they expand over the toe box, which we've accomplished by not having things stitched down right over where your toes meet.
And is that neoprene?
And it's neoprene underneath. So it's got a really stretchy neoprene section, and nothing's really attached where it would constrict over your toes. So like a normal shoe doesn't have any
expansion.
Right, it has a toe box and not a toe expansion area. And
but it's also a closed shoe.
It is
so
a closed shoe.
It's not a sandal.
Right, so it's not a sandal. So it's got a big neoprene piece and some leather pieces that go over it to give it a little bit of structure without really inhibiting the expansion of it. And as you sort of work your way up, you end up with sort of a similar thing, which is some structure to be able to keep the shoe on your foot and make it look like a shoe and not like a slipper, but also the ability to expand. So our midfoot section has some expansion built into it via the way it's sort of laced, and the laces are a little longer than a traditional shoe.
What Celia's doing is she has her hand in the shoe and she's sort of pushing up under the laces and showing how much this can expand for a swollen foot, which is one of the places feet swell.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we learned about why other companies aren't doing this is because expansion and structure are naturally in opposition to each other. So people with medical conditions really need support, and they want a good quality shoe. And that's hard to, it's hard to make that also expand.
Mm-hmm. I would just say that they do not look like orthopedic shoes.
They do not look orthopedic.
They are
look
cool.
Like that you would see in a sporting goods store that you might buy to run on the trails or something like that.
They look totally, quote unquote, normal.
And one of them is really designed for people with a lot of swelling. And that's the one that's the booty.
It's almost like a boot.
Right.
Yeah.
So we've been calling this one the Neo. And it's got a lot of the same features. So a really expandable toe box. We actually started the shoes with a wider than average outsole. So the base of the shoe is wider than a normal shoe base, if that makes sense. And then the nice thing about it.
Oh, I heard that. I heard that rip.
It's Velcro. It's not
Velcro.
So the nice thing about it is you end up with a design going from where your
ankle, sort
of a V shape, so that you could fit a really wide foot into it. And that's a problem a lot of our customers have, is they really want to wear booties or, you know, something that comes up over their ankles, but they can't actually get their foot into the shoe. And so that's one of the problems we've solved, is by designing a shoe that has a larger than average opening. So if you had a swollen foot and ankle, your foot would fit more easily into
this. There's no lace on this booty. There's
no lace.
There's
just
two Velcro
straps
that cross. And are those straps also neoprene?
They're elastic.
So they're very stretchy. Mm-hmm. So interesting way you've come to solve the issues that you were confronted with, like structure and expandability, the two things that seem to be
Odds. We've used four different designers over the course of a few years. So
I want to throw our numbers out, but I want to then come back to you, Laura, and find out how you found the designers. If you're in Anchorage, it's 550-8433, or we can take an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. I know I listened to some information about you, and there was a tennis shoe vice president of a tennis shoe athletic company who had 40 years of experience and was a critical person that you met along the way who offered you a lot. Was that happenstance, or tell me about that? And did he lead you to designers?
Some of this is proprietary information.
Oh, okay.
But I will say that we've been very, very lucky in the people that we've connected with. And over the course of a couple of years, we've been able to connect with people in the shoe industry that have a deep bench of experience.
So you kind of piggyback on other people's experience in some ways. I mean, they've been in the shoe field for a long time.
I mean, you know, the way you find your resources is you do what everybody does. You call your friends, you ask your friends, you look on the internet, and eventually it's, you know, one thing leads to another. And that's the way we got to all of our people. One thing leads to another.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think one of the great things that we've been able to do is leverage our understanding of what the problem is. I mean, Laura understands the problem because she has it. Ayla, who's our third partner, and I really understand the problem because we've spent a ton of time talking to Laura about it, talking to other people with this condition, looking on Facebook, researching, reading medical articles. And so one of the things we've been able to do is leverage our understanding of the problem and really get the designers and the people we're working with to find solutions to it. So we've really been able to say, here is the problem. You are a shoe designer. How would you help us solve this? Which has been really wonderful and a great learning experience.
Tell me about some of the things that didn't work. Did you come up with some designs that Or designers came up with ideas that you knew weren't going to work?
So communication is always a challenge, and it's a challenge in everything you do, right? It's not just a challenge of us talking to the designers. But I think it's really interesting to sort of feel like you've said one thing and then look at a shoe design and go, that is a very interesting interpretation of what we sort of stated the problem is. We spent a lot of time talking about materials and talking about, you know, what the shoe should look like. And really educating the designers about a shoe. Your feet don't swell out, they swell up, and the shoe has to expand over the toe box, the midfoot, and around the ankle. Because I think when you talk about foot swelling, the sort of automatic solution is, just start with a wider shoe. And we know that that's not really the problem. So that was one of the big challenges to overcome, was really to educate the folks we were working with about what actually is the problem. Hmm. And I think that's, Isaac alluded to that earlier, as being really something valuable in
honing,
a startup.
Honing down to get the solution that actually fits the problem.
So one of the things that I'm hearing you guys talk about is also how And you had asked earlier, Kathleen, about, you know, why is there an ecosystem here and why is this grown up and how are we able to have companies like Pindeer all of a sudden starting up in Alaska? And I do think it's because of the people kind of, you know, many folks keeping their day job, but just volunteering for
organizations.
Right,
I wanted to make the point that these guys still have day jobs, right?
Yep.
Your three partners all work.
Absolutely, yeah.
And just, I think Alaska is an interesting place because we're a pretty small community, but we show up for events and it's easy to convene a group of folks, and we all have, you know, 1 or 2 degrees of separation from the leaders
somebody
in the state, and also there's incredible resources outside the state. And so I think a lot of what's making the ecosystem take off in the last, you know, 4 or 5 years is that groups have organized. There's an angel investors network. Catherine Jernstrom has done at the Boardroom and bringing people together there. You know, several.
The regularity of that 1 million caps once a week.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like it's always
getting
happening.
People to come out.
Yeah. And during one of our breaks, Isaac, you said, "Oh, you know, Laura and Celia, you should talk about something about women entrepreneurs." And what was that? We have a couple minutes, and I want to make sure we get it in here.
Yeah, I mean, just the idea. There's a lot of research coming out from Kauffman Foundation and Harvard Business Review and others now that that women are better entrepreneurs. They happen to work better in groups, and they learn quicker. And and there's actually research around there. Maybe an entire show in the future, Kathleen. I think it's also one of those things, like a myth busting thing, where we have this idea that that startups are these, you know, college, oftentimes, you know, males, but the best entrepreneurs we're finding tend to be women.
It's
to all my
true
male
counterparts. Here, like Heather from Heather's Choice, and Vertical Harvest has some female co-founders. I think Catherine Jernstrom, obviously, from the Boardroom, who we've mentioned several times. I think that
Piper
really does play out. And Piper. Yeah, I was like, I'm going to forget somebody.
What's Piper?
Sorry. 60 Hertz. She has a company called 60 Hertz in town.
What is it?
Yeah, they were part of our 2017 cohort, and they have an app to help rural utility managers manage their assets.
So that's kind of interesting. Does that resonate with you guys, that women bring something to the table that's especially useful here? You did talk about talking a lot.
We've heard that in our as we've gone along, and we've seen that makes a lot of sense. We've seen research that shows that women businesses have higher returns in investment. I don't know if I could put my hands on that right now if I had to, but we've seen stuff like that happen or come across our table.
I don't know. I accept it. I'm just curious about it.
Yeah, and I mean, even more broadly, you know, I think that's one of the gifts of entrepreneurship is that it should be a very inclusive endeavor. And it's one of the things where Alaska, we have a lot of great problems for solving, and we have a lot of great people from a bunch of different communities here to solve them. And entrepreneurship is a very sharp tool to solve some of those problems, and it's open to folks with that can execute and are doers.
Yeah. I agree. I think one of the things that is really important that I want anybody who's interested in entrepreneurship to know is that this community has been so supportive of us. And it's been so easy for us to say, we should email so-and-so and really be able to connect. That's been really, really wonderful and great.
Oh, wow. We are out of time. Maybe we will be able to have a show on women entrepreneurs at some point, Isaac. I'm going to add those links that you gave me onto our website for people who want to hook into this community and maybe have ideas. So I want to thank our guests today. We had Laura Oden and Celia Crossett, who are two of the three founders of Pandair Shoes. You want to give a shout-out to your other partner?
Ayla Rogers.
All right. And then Isaac Vanderberg from Launch Alaska and a mentor to many startups here in Alaska. Rita Lowe is on the phone with us, an occupational therapist who works with people who need these kinds of shoes, and also our listeners and callers. I'll be back next week on Hometown Alaska when we invite a conversation with a Hmong community. We'll be joined by a Hmong elder and some East High students who are also Hmong to explore life in Anchorage for this community. Find us on the web at alaskapublic.org. Dave Waldron is our audio engineer. I'm Kathleen McCoy. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska.
Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.